And then to wrap up this section, number eight, this is a big one for those of us who are in ministry. Number eight, the role of the pastor is to equip people for ministry. The role of the pastor is to equip people for ministry. Now, I think we're past this. Don't turn the page yet. I know. I think we're past this, and probably the churches represented in this room and probably the churches who would purchase a resource like this. But I was not hired at the Journey, or I don't receive a paycheck from the Journey to do ministry. Now, I'm involved in ministry as a Christian. I'm involved in serving as a follower of Jesus Christ. But my role, the title that I carry as pastor, is to be an equipper. So if I'm doing all the ministry myself, first of all, I'm robbing the people in my church from an opportunity to grow. So in essence, anytime I do something that another person could do, especially if it's not something I'm doing just out of my own commitment to follow Christ, then I'm actually hurting the growth of the people inside of my church. So it's in my best interest, not only as a pastor, but also as a kingdom builder, to mobilize as many people as possible to be involved in ministry. So I'm to equip them for the work of ministry. And you see that in your notes, Ephesians 4:11. He is the one who gave these gifts to the church, the apostles, the prophets, the evangelists, and the pastors, pastor teacher probably. Their responsibility is to equip. It's to equip. Now here's what happens when you equip people. Look at this verse with fresh eyes again. Their responsibility is to equip God's people to do his work, not your work, his work, and build up the church, the body of Christ. Remember the systems thing I was talking about? This is one of the references to the body of Christ. Until we come to such unity in our faith and knowledge of God's Son that we will be mature and full grown in the Lord, measuring up to the full stature of Christ. So how do you become mature and full grown? How do you find unity in faith? Well, it's measuring up to the full stature of Christ. Now we could dissect this verse and have a little fun. I don't really have time to do that very much, but I love the phrase unity in our faith. You've heard the old saying about you can't rock the boat if everybody's busy paddling. Or if you're all paddling, you can't rock the boat. Well, look, if everybody's involved in serving, it creates a great sense of unity. And one of the reasons sometimes there's disunity inside of churches is because there's a lack of ownership among the people in the church. Because when you serve, you take ownership in the church. It's now your church. It's not the church you go to. It's the church, you know, you're involved in. It's your church. And so it creates unity. And then it creates knowledge of God's Son. I mean, you learn more about Jesus Christ when you're living out your faith than you do when you're hearing about your faith. That's why, there's something about that in James. You can look it up yourself. And then you become mature and full grown in the Lord. So a person who's not serving is not mature. So maturity is not based on what you know, it's based on what you do. So that's why the greatest, the deepest kind of preaching that you preach for is not to preach for knowledge, but to preach for application, to preach for doing. And then that's how you measure up to the full stature of Christ. Make sense? Okay, you don't have to agree with that section, but the good news is it's over. And so somebody told me that one time. So the best thing about your sermon was when it ended. So I don't know what that means. But here's some questions for you to evaluate maybe over lunch when you're at Chipotle or wherever. Am I becoming more like Jesus Christ? So it starts with you. First of all, are you becoming more like Jesus Christ? Look, you know why I lead these seminars? This is part of my serving. I mean, this is part of my commitment to be a follower of Jesus Christ is to serve you. I have a full-time job, that just gets backed up while I'm in here doing this. And so this is part of it. But, I'm hoping that something I do today is going to make me more like Jesus Christ. And as I serve you, hopefully that'll be part of it. But what's your act of serving? How are you becoming more like Christ? And then are the leaders in my church modeling Christ-like servanthood? If you don't have good followership at the top, or at the bottom, if you want to look at it that way, then you're not going to have followership throughout the church. So you set the DNA through the leaders. And then how is serving others part of following Jesus? That's a question for you to dissect. I've given you some of my thoughts. What are the key scriptures that will define the theology of ministry in our church? You might want to put those together. I didn't give you a lot of scripture here today, but you might want to do a search on that. And then here's one for you that we're going to talk about. Are there positions in my church where non-Christians can serve? And then when was the last time I did a theological study of ministry? And I put some resources in your appendix if you want to do that kind of study. So we've covered box number one. We're pretty much on time with where we're going in this seminar. So we've started the process of clarifying my theology of ministry. All right, everybody take three deep breaths right now. Just breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out real slow. You're not doing it. These deep breath. There you go. There we go. Get it all the way down into your lungs, you know. All right. Now we're ready to go, right? Punch the person beside you. Make sure they're awake. And we're going to cover this next section. Then we'll take a little break. Not necessarily for me. I don't necessarily need a break. But if you need a break, before we take a break, just go ahead and take it. We're going to have to move pretty tight here in order to stay on schedule. But we'll cover this next section, and then we'll take a little break. Now let's talk about creating first-serve opportunities. Creating first-serve opportunities. This is about how do we get new people involved in serving. So in most churches, the greatest potential is not to take people that are currently serving and move them up the ministry ladder. It's to get new people involved in serving. Is that right? So there's two ways to mobilize new people. Number one, you increase the number of new people in current ministry positions. So jot that down in your notes. You increase the number of people in current ministry positions. It's number one right there. That is, you take positions that you currently have in your church and you get new people involved in them. So you've already got a children's ministry area, and so you get new people involved in children's. You've already got a worship arts area, you get new people involved in worship arts. Simple, but it's something that needs to be said. Number two, you recruit new people to new ministry positions. So you get new people to lead new ministry positions. So let's say you're just starting your assimilation process. Those of you that have been in coaching with me, you know the best people to run your assimilation system are people who've come through the assimilation system. So you've been running your assimilation system personally. You've just been doing it. But now you're ready to hand that over to volunteers to run it. So you get new people who came through that system to run it. That's the only two ways you can do it. You get new people involved in current ministry positions, or you get new people involved in new ministry positions. So what I want to do is talk about how do you do both, and I want to give you some ideas on how to do both. Some you're familiar with, some may be new. And then I want to talk about tools that you have that help both. So I want to deal with each one individually, then some that deal with both. You'll see how that works. So how do you create first serve opportunities in current ministry positions? Here's one of the biggest ideas I have of this whole first section. It's the first bullet, and I wonder what you think the fill-in might be right there. How many of you would like to try to guess the fill-ins before I give them? Let me see your hands. Yeah, I thought there was some here. I could tell. Phil, I knew you were one. You're back there guessing them. And so some people like to guess. So what do you think that is? Set a blank on serving to force the involvement of new people. Set a deadline. Yep, term limit. It's actually time limit's a better phrase. Set a time limit. I like term limits, but it's such a politically laden word. I don't want to use time limits, a term limit. So those of you that have been in coaching, you know, set a time limit on serving to force the involvement of new people. This is probably one of the best tips I've got all day. Never put somebody in ministry without putting a timeline on their service. So I like to say it, never give a title without a timeline. So before I call you a small group leader, which is a title, I'm going to give you a timeline. So I don't want you to serve as a small group leader until Jesus returns. Because if you give that, you're going to be praying every day for Christ to return. Oh, Lord, please let it be today. It's the only hope I have of getting rid of this volunteer. So instead, you say, I want you to serve as a small group leader until the end of the semester. How long is that? Well, in our semester system, it's 3 months, 4 at the most. Set a time limit on serving. I want you to be on the worship arts team, and I want you to serve a 6-month time limit. So we're going to give you 6 months. But you always set a time limit. And what a time limit does is it forces the involvement of new people, but guess what it also does? It solves the burnout issue, because now people can't serve indefinitely. I've had group leaders, let me just back up and tell you this story. We have in our group system, the Activate system, the small group system, we have a practice that says you can't serve more than 2 out of 3 semesters. So we have our year's small group system is based on 3 semesters. And so you can only serve any 2 of those. So you've got to take a semester off. In other words, every time you serve 2 semesters, you've got to take a semester off. Now, we have people that love to teach. You know, they love to teach. I'm a little bit like that too. I don't necessarily need a semester off, you know. I honor the Sabbath. I don't even necessarily need a vacation. You know, I mean, I like to work. I like what I do. I take vacation for my family, not for me. And I enjoy what I do. They enjoy what they do. So I have people every time they've led a semester, they had a great experience. They led another semester, and now it's time for them to take their semester off. And they say, I don't need to take this semester off. You know, I need to keep leading. Well, a couple of things with that. One is, it's always better to rest when you're not exhausted. Okay, so it's better to take a break, you know, when you're not feeling tired. Because, you know, you are going to feel tired eventually. So it's better to take a break when you're not tired. Secondly is, it's good for the development of your group for you not to lead three semesters in a row. Because they've learned everything they've got from you over the last two semesters. So you need to take a break and go study. You need to take a break and sit under somebody else. Third, you need to model good small group followership so that you can be a better small group leader. Because someone who's always leading is never a very good follower. So they need to sit under another teacher. And that's how they learn. And then it also prevents burnout. And so I tell people this, we love you too much to let you serve another term. So you need to take some time off. And then, of course, it's good for involvement of new people, which is what this is about. Because the only way that leader is ever going to raise up another leader is if we force them to stop leading. Now, you get a little pushback from that at first. But once it becomes part of your culture, and I actually have a whole talk on this. I call it the stress and release philosophy of ministry. And it's just like your muscles will wear out if you go in and push your muscles every day. Let me tell you this story just to further illustrate this point because it's such a big principle. You wouldn't know this by looking at me, but I actually have two brothers who are both professional bodybuilders. And so I have two older brothers, and they're my middle brother is actually, you know, he competed professionally as a bodybuilder. He's like a Hulk of a guy, you know. And then so it's my oldest brother, then my middle brother, then it skipped me. I don't know why, you know. And so they're bodybuilders. Well, I used to watch them because I grew up with all these Hulk-like guys around the church, or I mean around my home. And so, you know, we always had like Lee Haney, if you know that guy, he was like Mr. Universe for about a decade back in the 80s. He was always at our house, you know, and I mean, he could barely fit through the door. He was such a big guy. Well, I would go to the gym with them and watch them and all that stuff. And one of the things I learned is that, I didn't lift weights. They were way too heavy. Are you kidding me? I'm not going to lift that. So, you know, I would watch them. And what they would do is one day they would work their chest. And then the next day they would not work their chest. And then they would come back to their chest like 3 days later. So they would work their chest one day, their legs the next day, and like their back the following day. Then they would come back to like their arms or something. And they had this rotation. And so I asked my brother, I'm like, why don't you just like work your chest every day? Because my brother always had like smaller legs. He was like a really big upper body. He had these legs that he could have sued for non-support. And so I'm like, you know, why don't you just like, that's like a bodybuilder joke, sorry. And I'm like, why don't you just like work your legs every day? He's like, well, if I do that, they'll never grow. Because if I work them every single day, they won't grow. Because this is what he told me. He said, the growth comes during the release, not during the stress. That's true, right? And so you stress them, and that doesn't cause them to grow. It's the day after when they're resting that causes them to grow. Well, it's like that when it comes to ministry as well. You know, if you constantly push your small group leaders to lead, they never grow. If you constantly are allowing someone to serve in children's ministry, they never get better at that area. And that's why, you know, I mean, in the education system, they call this the Peter principle, you know, because you just never take that time off. Like right now, he's going to tell one of his group leaders they can't serve anymore. He's going to go fix that. You can't serve. You're done. But does everybody get this principle of the time limits? Now, we're going to come back to it. I'm sure you got a lot of questions about it. So we're going to come back to it and talk about how you do that. But that's one way to create new serving opportunities. You create a gap. And by the way, when we started our small group system, when we finished the first two semesters and we were about to start the third, and I looked at all of these leaders who had led, and I looked at all the new leaders we didn't have, I thought it was going to kill us. I thought this will be it. Because if I don't allow these 21 leaders who have led to lead again, I'm never going to be able to replace them. And I was worried about this because I was afraid this would be the death of our small group leadership. But it actually, they rose to the occasion. They found new people. And now looking back, it was one of the healthiest decisions we ever made. And so, you know, when you build a system for health, even though it hurts on the front end, like that first day in the gym, you know, over time, it's the most healthy thing you can do. So that's what the timeline's about. Number two, divide all existing ministry areas into quads. I think that's spelled Q-U-A-D-S, but your guess is as good as mine, quadrants. Now, the boxes you see in your notes, this is not the four boxes up here, but it's a similar principle. You take each area in your church and you divide it into four different areas. Now, I am going to defer here to a resource that I left out of the bibliography, but it's really probably the best resource I could recommend for this section. It's a resource called Fractals, FRACTALS by Wayne Cordero. You guys know Wayne? CORDEIRO is how you spell his last name. Now, he talks about this briefly in his book, Doing Church as a Team, but it's really worth going to his website and buying the talk that he did on this. And you can get that at enewhope.org. So his church is called New Hope. So you put an E in front of it, like electronic, enewhope.org. And then he's also got another site that you can probably get to it from called mentoringleaders.com.